A few seconds early and call it 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, this is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, from this year's Poets at Art Fest, four-day poetry festival, you're going to hear 9 more featured readings from it. There were in total close to 65 readers this year. The event was that goes without saying, I guess, that the event will dominate this radio show for the next several weeks. In the first hour today, you're going to hear readings by David Malone, Jason Heroux, Allison Chisholm, Michael Castiles, and Carolyn Smart. In the second hour from, again, that festival, you'll hear readings by Bruce Cudmore, Mary Lee Bragg, Brendan Wiley, and Colin Morton. And top of the hour thing I always do is just let you know that occasionally some poetry, music, or spoken word on this show may contain strong language, but I try to preserve that as much as I can and air it and honor the integrity of the work and the poet, writer, or composer themselves. I will mention, too, quickly, in years past, when I've aired this event, and again, this is the 11th year, hard to believe, but what I've done is tried to do it chronologically, but with this year's greater numbers of readers and varying time length segments, I found it best to jump around a bit, so I'm kind of shuffling the sessions a bit so that a poet's reading doesn't cross over the hour mark, so at the 5 o'clock, because when that happens, the blog space that I save this to breaks it up into 2 different sessions, so I don't want to do that to somebody's reading if I can help it. So sometimes I can't help it, but I try not to let it happen. And so again, this is one of those weeks where I'm going to shuffle a bit. So the first 5 poets you'll hear actually were in day 2, and then in the second hour you're going to hear poets from day 1. Anyway. Enough said. First 5 poets you hear today, read in the mid-afternoon session of the second day of the festival. Coming up, here are David Malone, Jason Heroux, Allison Chisholm, Michael E. Castiles, and Carolyn Smart. And let's see, should be good to go, I think. Coming up first, David Malone was born and raised in Toronto, but now lives in Kingston with his family. His work has appeared in the Antigonish Review, the Queen's Quarterly, and several anthologies published by Hidden Brook Press. Let's bring up David Malone.
Thank you, Bruce. I'm going to start with a poem I've read elsewhere, but I'll do it again here. It's called The Haunting Cry. The loneliness, it crushes now, just crushes. It's well before first light, and I've just heard the cry of a loon, as I sometimes do at this early hour. We're not far from the lake. It's warm enough for the windows to be open. There's nothing like the sound of that cry, even more so when it comes out of the dark. As if the sky were trying to die, is how the poet describes it, after calling it ghastly, too. I don't think there's anything ghastly about it. Piercing, sobering, melancholy, but not ghastly. It's too companionable for that. Anyway, for me it is, despite knowing, of course, that it's not a cry for me. How grateful I am when I hear it. And yet those lines of the poet always come to mind when I do hear it, as if the sky were trying to die. It's crept, seemingly out of nowhere, to have suddenly arrived. Crushing, at a time when I've not the strength I once had. But it's true, too, that my mind seems larger now, or at least needs to be fed in weightier ways, with weightier things. But where to find those things, and how to identify what they are. Not as if the sky were dying, but as if the sky were trying to do that. But why would a poet ever think the sky would try to do that? Because it's grown old? Because it's turned ill? Because it's lost its will? And yet the image is so beautiful, so hauntingly beautiful. When I first read those lines years ago, I wept. Standing in the library with the poem in hand, I wept. Every time I hear a loon and think of the lines of that song its cry calls to mind, I think of that too, that I wept when I first read them. Piercing, sobering, melancholy, but a cry that haunts as well. Maybe that's it, a haunting event to match a haunting cry. So crushing, the weight of it keeps me awake. Always an early riser, now it's more often in the middle of the night. Perhaps it's the night's deep silence I need, during which one might believe the sky could indeed die. When I imagine it, I imagine a sort of slow turning as at the same time there's one last exhalation of breath that, ever slower, ever spreads. I've seen beauty in death, seen that slip into deliverance whose solemn cry is sounder silence. But I've seen it too in other ways, seen in it beauty's famished opposite. And if it were dying, if part of the universe really were about to go out, what could one do to stop it? One who dwells as grateful guest. Plant wheat in it, as I once heard someone lovingly say. Plant wheat, and maybe a vineyard too. Or should husbandry of another kind be tried? Praise, say, in meter and rhyme that, if done right, confirms the pulse of time. Not that one should expect it, not in so calamitous a way, but from time to time a dying such as this does take place within. Then oppressive despair sets in, as it has in me this early morning. So indeed I plant wheat, I nurse the vineyard there, and I urge myself to praise what's now being raised by the harshest lie. And then I hear that haunting cry. Thank you. This next poem is called The Wanderer. It comes with an epigraph. My brain is troubled. A turn or two I'll walk to still my beating mind. That's Prospero from The Tempest. His mind going, he walks the halls. Long, narrow, poorly lit. Walks them at night, I mean. I say walks, but shuffles, really. His hips, knees, and ankles stiff, sore, and cracking dry. When I wake in the night, it's what I think of. Him walking the halls in the nursing home in which he now lives. Dementia is not uncommon at his age, nor is alcohol-related damage to the alcoholic. But the two together in one brain? So a sort of dryness, a distilled dryness there too, I think. Picturing it, I picture dry, fallen leaves. In the yard of the home in which I grew up, there were plenty of dry, fallen leaves come the fall. In those days, one could burn leaves, so there were days, I remember, when there would be five or six fires burning in five or six yards along the street. They were smoky fires with meager flame, but the leaves burned yet. The skin of my palms burned, too, the year I fell into one. But he was gone by then. He did a lot of walking in those days as well. Walking? Wandering, I mean, like a man lost. And the source of this anguish? Knowing he'd not been born. I mean, knowing not where or by whom. How does one begin with a beginning so uncertain? How does one cease wandering? For, despite the many stops along the way, the many marriages, I mean, he never has, when the wandering is a searching for. The mind may go, but the anguish, it seems, does not. So it's no wonder he wanders yet. As one not truly born, it's no wonder. In the hospital one morning, before I moved him into the nursing home, anxious, angry, aggressive, as the nurse tried to reinsert his IV. Trying to help, I took his hands in mine, but I hadn't the strength. It's almost shocking at past 60 to be struck by one's father, who's in his late 80s. Shocking, too, to see such aggression in a man of his age. But he has a right, perhaps. He has a right. Wherever he's wandered, he's found no answer for his yieldless plight. No, he'll die as he's lived, unmoored, unbound. Maybe the halls he'll wander down then will be the halls in my head. But the gift he's given me, aside from life, is the need to search. The need to understand why life comes around it with strife. It's what all my favorite searchers do. This goes back to my cab driving days. This is called First of All Customers. It was dawn, and first of all customers that day from out her house on the hill, Lady Wisdom got into the car, who was created before all else in creation. And as she did, I said the usual, and she said, yes, the usual, please. As you can see, I've got my dancing shoes on and my long flowing robes and my bangles and cymbals too, ready to give praise to the Creator, ready to give thanks for this outflow of life and more life, rising up over the horizon as I've done since long ago when first cracking of fiery light pierced the shimmering sky. Oh, what power, if only you'd seen it. And then as we got on our way, I asked, but I've always wanted to ask, when she's ridden in the car with me, whether she's truly been, as the good book says, inspiration to the Creator, once he'd created her. And she said, of this, there's no doubt. Creation would have been different, would have been much less than ever it was, and will continue to be, if she'd not been created first. If he'd not seen what it was by creating her, he was then capable of creating after, which surpasses. For before, he didn't know. No, he didn't know. And I said, are you sure he didn't know? Are you sure this can be said of him? Taken by what I thought of as her effrontery. And she said, yes, I'm sure. It's creation makes the creator, not the other way around. And then as I let her out down by the water, back of the psychiatric hospital, where once she began to move in fluid praise of creation, about the car and then away, I wave the fare as I always do when Wisdom rides with me, for with me she rides for free. This poem is called Uprisen Ash, and there's an epigraph to this too. Delacroix said that he had discovered painting when he had neither teeth nor breath left. This was Van Gogh to his brother Theo. These are the wounds of age. Brittle skin, weeping fissures, and a soft inner core. So the beetle easily gets in. Chewing sweeter blood, he cut short our days. There's little left for the saw to do. It's the same for those close by. Plentiful is our parasite. We're uprisen ash, and one by one we're coming down. But we who live yet ponder death. Ponder it now as our living is a dying. And what we know is that life is only life when death does not prevail. This beetle brings forth death. As it rises, life in us subsides. Lives of death are death to life. City trees, we can't be free to fall. By night we feel our own consummation, by day the fury of the saw. Soon this fury will be turned on me. The pain the others have felt in losing their limbs will be mine. The pain they felt in losing their lives. They didn't want to go, and neither do I. No, I want to live and live yet, offering what green I can, what shade, or even what beauty my limbs may utter as I suffer rain or ice. I want to live and live yet, with arms aloft as in high praise, expressive of life at its furthest reach, which it took all of my years to yearn towards. For I am indeed uprisen ash. I know at last what it means to be so. This is the last poem. This is called Gift of Change. Oh, so thank you again, everyone, for coming out. Gift of Change. A man is nothing if he is not changing, says Henry Cole, as he watches a large whale loom in dark waters. Thankfully, for who wants to be nothing, I am changing. Early in my seventh decade, and I'm changing still. But whereas in the past when I was changing, I had a sense of what that change would bring, and the feeling too that it would not overwhelm, now I have no sense of what change will bring, and no feeling that it will not overwhelm. For everything I used to believe, I believe no longer. Every pillar against which, through every change I've lent, has crumbled. That is the change. I don't know who I am. I don't know what I am. I don't even know where I am. Just what universe is this? And no poetry, no history, no philosophy, no theology, no science. Or maybe that's it, a change towards something deeper, towards something wholly unknown. The other day in the library, I could almost feel the books turning to dust, as indeed they are, feel the erosion taking place upon the shelves. It was as though I was feeling the demise of all that's noble, of all that's boldly been thought. And the tears then to commingle with that dust like a mourner's at the tomb of the beloved. For it is noble. It is beloved. It does seem a demise. And though I'd rather not, since long from it I've supped, let go of it sometimes, I feel I must. Even if, in doing so, I do nothing but fall. But perhaps that's just as well. I'm aging, I'm graying, and if falling means falling toward. I say falling, but could as well say breaking, say shattering, for there's also this. To myself, I no longer fit. The reason for change, then. The reason, too, for that unknown in which perhaps, unpillared, unbound, space enough might be found. Bodiless and strange, Cole says, as he sees the burst from the exploding blowhole. Bodiless and strange. Gift of change. Postscriptum. I once saw a great whale breathe myself, so I know of what this poet speaks. When you see a great whale breathe, you know everything does. Thank you.
David, another hand.
Up next.
Jason Hurrell was the Poet Laureate for the City of Kingston, Ontario from 2019 to 2022, where he lives. He is the author of the prose poem collection Like a Trophy from the Sun, Guernica Editions, 2024, and the chapbook A Further Introduction to Bingo, co-written with Dag D. Stromsvog, Above Ground Press, 2024. Let's bring up Jason.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. Great to see some familiar faces and some new faces as well. And thank you, Bruce, for that introduction and for doing all that you do this weekend. I'm going to read a few pieces from the chapbook that Bruce mentioned, A Further Introduction to Bingo. It was co-written with that Norwegian prose poet, Dag T. Stromsvog. It's a bit of an odd collection. We just went back and forth emailing piece by piece. We had no idea where it was going or what it was about, really. And so it was a nice surprise once we finished everything. And it's about a bingo hall that comes to life, and there's all these recurring characters that that interact as well. The bingo hall wandered through the woods, wondering where numbers emerged from. Did numbers have parents? Were they born like mammals? Hatched like birds, manufactured in a factory? The bingo hall realized he'd spent most of his life in the company of numbers, and yet knew so little about them. Numbers were a mystery to the bingo hall, which was another way of saying the bingo hall was a mystery to itself. I'm not spoiling anything with this next chapter, but at the bingo hall's funeral, the bingo hall stated there was a mistake. I'm alive and well. But the mourners continued mourning. Many of them wept. It's okay, the bingo hall said. I'm still alive. The mathematician told him to shush. No talking during the ceremony, he said. Plus, there's no need to brag. You act like you're the only one who was ever alive. But you're not. We've all lived, somehow or another. The male woman told the mathematician to shush. No talking during the ceremony, she said. Okay, I'm going to read a few more recent poems now. And by recent, I mean within the last few years and from last month as well. So, first things last. The first time anyone saw the Loch Ness Monster was August 1933. The last sighting was less than a year ago. The first and last thing I look at each day is a luminous digital clock radio that brightens the bedroom. The first rule of war is to prevent the enemy's ability to fight. The first sign of acute mountain sickness is dizziness. The first anonymous passenger pigeon flew across the sky over 5 million years ago. The last one, named Martha, passed away alone in the Cincinnati Zoo on September 1st, 1914. The first tie I wore belonged to my father. The last tie my father wore belonged to me. The first law of geography states, everything is related to everything else, but near things are more related than distant things. The last ingredient on the list is the one that weighs the least. This poem's called A Page from Novika Tadic's Notebook. Novika Tadic was a Serbian poet. He died in 2011. He was born in a small village in Montenegro, spent most of his life in Belgrade. It was translated by Charles Simic, and a few books are out there. It's still in print. This poem is called The Page from Novika Tadic's Notebook. But between you and I, that's a lie. It's not really from his notebook, but it's inspired by his work. Turn around and ask, why doesn't the sawdust believe in the saw? Night chases day. Fruit follows seed. Let the thread worship its needle. Let the tap water be dragged back to rain. Into an apple, onto a hook, out of the earth, worm your way, worm your way. See that little dark cloud high in the sky, pretending the snow? That'll be me one day. The ones born with sleeves spend their lives looking for those born with arms. And the headless king carries his gold crown in his hands, ashamed. Blind wind, drive the rain safely home. Tell us, dust, How to greet the broom when it sweeps. This poem is called Eventual Harvest. A shifting chevron of geese honk and fade across a bridge of sky without bearing or beam. I'm still where I happen to be. A light fog rises from smokestacks of grass. The green ground ivy needs me to flower. The leaf litter wants my beach mast to fall. A lone fox trots beyond the foxhole yard. Are we somehow in this world the only dreams we have? I'm the only boat I know how to row. Each day glows shorter each day. Night blossoms. We are left with what we leave. This poem is called Cavity. I wandered away from today to my dentist appointment. The war was still at war. Loss ached in the heart's jaw like a cavity. Grieving bacteria recast candied joy to acid, weakening the enamel of ourselves. I walked along an empty stretch of road, pocked with potholes. Abandoned houses hosted rust and moss. Decay lives in us as we live with it. We hurt when it hurts. I ferried a speck of death across town in my mouth and sat in the patient's chair. A voice overhead asked that I open wide. I stumbled home after, frozen and numb, hungering for the honey of unseen bees. I'll just read a few more. This one's called Midsummer. What your world was for me once, let me now be the same world for you. Make my fireflies blaze at dusk near the lake. Allow my night to arrive. Let my offices, stores, and shops turn off their lights and lock their doors. Charge my stars to shine. This poem is called Shopping Cart, and have you ever kind of gone across a parking lot and you've seen a shopping cart right at the edge of that parking lot, and you kind of wonder, what's its story? What's it thinking? What's it all about? So I kind of imagine what that perspective would be, shopping cart. I waited at the edge of a vacant, glistening lot and wept. You weren't there. You didn't hear. But are you nearby, listening now? I often felt bone lonely, roaming around, loaded with the usual necessities, provisions, perishables, rolling beyond checkouts, past exits, circling around again. All those years, not knowing how, the emptiness returning weighed the same as the goods going out. Our haul is loss. Thank you for steering me clear and bringing me home. Even the most alone are not on their own. And the last poem I'll read is called In Praise of Erasers. Since 1770, countless erasers have croaked, correcting our mistakes, giving their lives to remove what's wrong. Some still do. I saw several rush into the burning building of yesterday. None of them survived. How many erasers are around these days? It seems like mistakes have gained power and now rule the land. But if we can bring giant pandas back from extinction, why can't we do the same for erasers? It's the only way we'll learn. Look, overhead, it's a small pink cloud. When it snows hard enough, the world will look like a blank page again. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Up next. Allison Chisholm lives and writes in Kingston, Ontario. Her poetry has appeared in the Northern Testicle Review, The Puddles of Sky, Chap Poem, The Dollhouse, The Weak Shall Inherit the Verse, and The Proper Tales Press chapbook On the Count of One. Her book, On the Count of None, was released by Anvil Press in the fall of 2018. Her photography has been exhibited in the tiniest gallery. Let's please bring up Alice.
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you, everyone, for coming out. I'm just going to read 4 short poems. Better than okay. Before our hair turned gray, we lived a rich life in an ancient city. On a train, we rattled north, meaning to go south, still arriving at our destination. Like a paper airplane, we rode the tropical highs and lows, drifting through cityscape and seascape. We followed the rise of incense into a silent temple, and like a tomb swept clean, we left our offering. We lived a lifetime in 1 full year. We taught the Queen's English. $100 Taiwanese was equivalent to 5 Canadian and 3 US and bought us 1 Taiwanese beer, which was always better than okay. Like an ancient art form, we pinned our homes on maps. We wore our mittens in the mountains. We set off fireworks on beaches, where we found the crucial pieces to complete the crucial puzzle. We lived a life untethered. Here's to being tethered. This poem is called This Night. This night is full of angels, like a city full of windows, or a fountain full of pennies, or an ocean full of shipwrecks. This night is full of playgrounds full of glass. This night is like a forest full of fires, full of secrets, full of equations, full of errors. This night is like a hallway full of drawers, a sky full of moons, a drawer full of keys. This dawn is like a church full of skeptics or a cavern of believers. This night is full of noise. This ground is full of bodies. This room is like a rising tide, rising tide, rising tide, rising tide, rising tide. Paid for in pennies. The sweet sleeps of some while the sun was on our skin, and the sand was in the sandbox, and the lawn was freshly mowed, and the sense of something lingered with drifting in the sky and petals on the ground. With pennies in our pockets, we sweep away the crumbs. And this is the last poem, and this is for my son, Jonas. Baby Buddha, your extraordinary abundance is a never-setting sun. Thank you.
Up next, Michael E. Castiles is a writer, musician, collage artist, outdoor enthusiast, library curator, part-time massage therapist, part-time stay-at-home dad, bookmaker, designer, and editor at Puddles of Sky Press. His first novel, Furthermore the Lake, was recently published through 1366 Books, an imprint for experimental fiction. Let's bring up Michael.
Hi, everyone. I'm just going to read a bunch of different chapters from my recently published novel, Furthermore the Lake. And as you can see, I've been doing a bunch of readings, and my goal was to try to read, like, every chapter. So these are chapters I haven't really read yet. The further I walked, the closer I got. To what? I wasn't sure. But my feet kept moving, carrying the rest of me along with them. They had their own preconceived destination, somewhere they might finally settle down, a little slice of heaven, a place to call home. I was just their solitary witness, a quiet companion, the documenter of their long journey. It was easy. They walked, I followed. The path snaked along the lakeside. The sky was a dark canvas the stars punched small holes into one by one. A sickle moon crept up from behind the horizon. A large bird beat its enormous wings, faded into distance. Somewhere a duck quacked, then hushed, and the relative silence resumed. A few soft waves lapped against the shore with a steady rhythm. The small stones cascading across one another clattered out a soft melody. It was a lullaby, though I wasn't sure who was being lulled. Me, the city, or the lake itself. The lake sighed. I sighed. The city drifted off into the night, far above the lake and me. I heard it through the graveyard. You didn't make it. Everyone else was there. Late fall, dusk arriving early, the sky was headstone gray. Long grass swayed in stray gusts of wind. The leafless branches of a nearby oak creaked like wooden bones. A quiet crow on a bare limb. With one hand, I held my hat tight to my head. I gripped my umbrella in the other. Voices spoke and I was there, but hardly. I remember a hymn, but not which one. I remember my mother's long overcoat, my father's reddened eyes, the pile of dirt draped with astroturf, the rectangular hole, an emptiness longing to be filled. The heavy air trembled with distant thunder. We had just begun as the first drops fell. Umbrellas bloomed like black roses. A prayer I don't remember. Faces downturned. The rain repeating our every word. The day had grown old. I watched the sun's last rays dip beneath the horizon. For a while I sat there in the faint glow that remained. The fire crackled yellow and orange as it spread through the kindling. I placed a few larger sticks and, once those caught, a decent-sized log. The lake lay quiet, reflective. A stray cloud stared back at itself. Far out on the lake, a loon released a soft warble, and before it could finish, another took up the call, wailing. A third and fourth responded with trills and hoots and ululations. Then, just as quickly, the lake quieted. Cricket chirp, frog croak, branch creak. For a while, nothing much happened, which happened to be the point of it all. The log caught and I added another. The cloud moved along, revealing a single star in its reflection. A loon called. Another's response. A few sparks flickered upward, mingling with the fireflies, lingering in the gathering dusk. I wake up, but feel exhausted. I wake up and I'm ready to hit the hay. I wake up and suddenly the day's begun. This is how I wake 90% of the time, my battery at 10% still in need of a charge. I'm falling, and the morning rushes up to greet me. I'm never prepared. I close my eyes, and my eyes snap open, and I'm another day older. My alarm clock stares at me. I wake up reading where I left off. I wake fully dressed, my shoes already tied, briefcase in hand, and I'm heading out the door. I wake when the dump truck rattles my bedroom window, when the robin loses its head, when my alarm clock tells me to. I should have closed the curtains because now the sun's come waltzing in and there's no sweeping it away. I wake sweeping. I wake weeping. I wake too early, close my eyes, and wake up later when the world is ready for me. I close my eyes and miss my cue. I wake, and the moon is peeking into my sock drawer. I close my eyes and wake up broken, then close my eyes and wake up repaired, but with aftermarket parts and dodgy wiring. I'd wake, but I'm awake. I'd fall asleep, but the day is tapping its foot. When I wake, I'm a new person, though I'm exactly the same as before. I fall asleep to my eyes opening every time I close my eyes. Getting back to your toothbrush, there's one more thing I wanted to add.
Your toothbrush is so perfectly yours. Its worn bristles are your wispy hair. The way its head angles, it's your head. Even the curves of its handle are your curves. If your toothbrush could speak, it would have your voice. It would remind me to brush, gargle, and floss. I woke in the night and I swear I heard your toothbrush crying, but when I turned on the bathroom light, it just stood in the cup beside mine, quiet as a toothbrush. I turned off the light and climbed back into bed. What I'm trying to say is that your toothbrush is still your toothbrush, though I'm certain you have another. By now, you're likely on your second or third. They never last as long as you think. But this toothbrush will outlive them all. It woke me earlier, but now its silence lulls me back to sleep as the first drops of rain tap against the window. The sky is a leaky faucet about to burst. You left, and I am sole heir to our memories. Boxes stacked toward the ceiling, they fill every space. I can't locate the door or open a window or find the phone to call you and ask for help. I blow some dust off a box and open it. I carried you in my arms and twirled you around until you were dizzy. You towered over me and placed your heavy, weathered hand on my shoulder. We walked our bikes up a steep hill. You smiled at me in the mirror and my reflection smiled back. I held you in my hands. You were that small. I stood on your fingertip and waved. I was microscopic. A black butterfly lands on my fingertip, its inked wings like a Rorschach test. Then it flits away, carrying my answer before I even know what it is. The heavy air swallowed all sound, and dark clouds scrolled across the sky, predicting a dreary rain or an isolated shower on this hillside overlooking the quiet hamlet and, furthermore, the lake. The long line of cars, a hushed parade. I'm afraid to vacuum. A few of your stray hairs remain, but even these are falling apart, feeding the dust mites and their offspring. Half a shrew, a house sparrow's head, vole frozen in eternal panic. I remember the sky was blue. I was swimming in the lake. The current tugged me outward. The sun on my skin, that's what I remember most. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. That's how the world ends. I keep whimpering and the world keeps banging, so I guess we're doing okay for now. Though here, in the wilderness, I hear only my whimpers and a black fly buzzing around my ear. Every wavelet that laps the shore is the lake speaking its thoughts. Invisible tongue, blue sigh, glass tulip, sunken sunlight, shuffled rain clouds, ponderous ellipses of self-doubt. The lake remembers a seagull, but it's nowhere to be seen. It remembers loons, but they're gone too. No, wait, I just heard one. A heart-wrenched wail. No response. This could have been years ago, or sometime last week, or 3 days from now. It's the type of thing that happens again and again, and once started, can't be stopped. A strand of hair stuck to your cheek. I brushed it away. It's the only thing that keeps me from wandering off course. It's what passes through my mind every time I squirt a little toothpaste on my toothbrush. My eyes flutter. I wake. My alarm clock is staring at me. The problem with memory is that it's all about perspective. For example, what I remember with some certainty is that we talked all afternoon, but the conversation is hazy. It seemed we'd never be free of the humidity. I open a box labeled Little Bits of Sky That Need Gluing. Inside, I find a meteor shooting across a broken piece of atmosphere. If your toothbrush could speak, I'd speak back, but your toothbrush doesn't have ears and can't hear a thing. Suddenly, a loud crash outside. I bolted upright, rolled out of bed, and sped to the window. I couldn't see anything, so I ran downstairs, flipped on the lights, and stepped out. The air was humid. The night was still. It felt like the rain would start at any second. My garbage can was knocked over. A portly raccoon waddled into darkness. The midnight lake dips a pen into its black ink and jots down brief thoughts. Horse constellation. Laminated moonlight. The frogs. Music box. My hands had traded places. I didn't know what handed I was anymore. I fumbled everything. Everyone at the office noticed, but no one said a thing. I open a box labeled Fragile, Handle with Care. It's full of shadows, folded neatly and tucked away. I ignore this box and reach for another. I woke in a hospital. A nurse handed me a clipboard and pushed me through a set of doors into a small room with bright lights. You were lying on the table in front of me, your chest wide open. I didn't want to look, but I did, and I saw your heart. It was my alarm clock, staring at me. I woke with a nurse above me, looking down. It was a good thing they found you when they did, she said. The tide might have come back and washed you away. I woke up with a nurse above me, looking down. You didn't make it, she said. Now close your eyes. Go back to sleep. Treetops bend their backs to the wind. Gravity loses focus. Every morning I wake knowing my cells have been swapped with others. Deep within the lake exists the inside of my head. I look up into the blue. Everything is a mirror. Some days I'm a frog. Some days I'm the lake. Some days I'm the blue. Like every other brick, I am immovable. The refrigerator hums. A clock is stalled. A faucet drips in steady rhythm. And this is my last piece. The city doesn't sleep as often as it should, but some nights, when cars are tucked into their garages and pigeons huddle on a wire, when picnic tables doze like horses, when the streetlights are thankful for their many nightlights, when a black cat slinks into its shadow, when skyscrapers stop to catch their breath, when flags rest against poles and the moths have finally settled, the city sighs and sinks into a slumber so deep it dreams of breaking away from the ground and lifting into the air like a giant concrete iceberg. Slowly it rises into the sky. A steady breeze drifts it over the lake. Far below, someone stands on the shoreline looking up. The city has no idea who it is or how they were left behind. Thank you so much.
Up next, Carolyn Smart lives in the country north of Kingston. She is the author of 6 poetry collections, including Hooked and Kareen, both from Brick Books, an award-winning memoir, and a forthcoming collection of poetry to be published by Book Hug in 2026. She founded the Bronwyn Wallace Award for Emerging Writers and for 3 decades was director of creative writing at Queen's University. She mentors and edits emerging writers through her website, www.carolinsmarted.edit. So weird. I was expecting an ad. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, it's late. CarolinSmartEditing.ca. How's that? Let's bring up Carolyn.
Thank you very much. I must say it's quite remarkable to be here today, because a person who was in the very first poetry workshop I ever attended is here. It was a good time 50 years ago, I have to say. Anyway, and I want to especially thank Bruce, who is the heart and soul of poetry in this town, and I hope you know how very valued you are, Bruce. Thank you so much. For the 2 donkeys that live on Road 38. From the window of the car, we would see the donkeys shining like chocolate in the rich green field. They stood close together, sometimes eating, sometimes sniffing fragrant summer air, doing their good work to guard the sheep. How we love to see them. Their tails flicked, their soft, calm necks stretched down into the meadow grass. All that summer of your dying, they had no idea of other work they did. Momentum. At the open door, I watched you with the phone on speaker in your hand and listened to the doctor tell you what would kill you. A suspicious thickening. You nodded, a curious smile flickering your face. I put my arms around your back, pressed up against your soft, warm stomach. You, at 72, beautiful. "I'm so sorry," I said, knowing how perfectly pathetic and true that was. I could have said, "I feel so damn sorry for myself, all the pain I'd witness and all the loss. So damn sorry I'd be walking by myself down the trails through wilderness we loved, reaching out as if for your hand. My face sparkling with tears, I am looking back to see if you might yet be running after me." Revelation. When the surgeons cut him open, did they startle at his flaming heart? They must have thought they found a velvet painting of a saint. He would have laughed at that. Yet his heart was so luminous, he once drove for 2 hours to look for our boy who called, crying and wandering the streets. The boy didn't know exactly where he was, but said he was afraid and very tired. His father drove and drove and suddenly saw him. It was 2 a.m. He was there, head down, walking. His father pulled him to safety and took him into his arms. How did they find each other? One ruined boy in a black hoodie, one man driving the Ottawa streets in a dark car, heart ablaze. Faith. When the doctor said the operation was curative, I shouldn't have believed him. I'm the kind of person who puts my trust in words like that. You wore a hospital blue gown and slippers as we held on to each other, kissing in the hallway. I saw the nurse pat your back as you walked towards the surgeons. "They're going to go at me with hammer and tongs," you'd said to me in the car as the sun was rising to make me laugh. We watched raccoons climb out of garbage bins before I parked the car. You were probably ashamed to cry in front of health professionals. As the elevator took me down to ground, the tears soaked through my mask. I couldn't see the street. But then I drove, and much later the surgeon called to say it had gone perfectly. I shouldn't have believed him, but I did. The man who loved sugar. The night we met, he spoke of candy, the chocolate logs and sweetie pies of his youth. He liked a cup of rich, dark coffee with a complex pastry, a bowl of Cherry Garcia ice cream. Chemo confused his mouth. Surgeons rebuilt his insides as if he were machinery. Foods became unbearable. Later, he thought of possibilities, the baklava and Mars bars, the wine from California, and best of all, Torone. He would try for hours to order online, ticking boxes, swearing, failing to complete. I helped the order happen, and the van arrived, box after box laid upon a table close to him, the sweet, soft nougat, pistachios winking out of the honey and egg white, his face a light. Language mostly gone by then. He'd call for flat whites, flat whites. I'd bring them to his mouth. Kiss for Daniel. I saw you lift your father from the bed into the wheelchair. I saw your face beyond his shaking chest, his gaunt shoulder. I stood and watched. You, most careful of boys, holding your dying father in your arms. And I saw you pause, then lean to kiss his neck. You knew it was the final time. In those last days, he didn't want the touch of anyone. We wept about it, knew it true. But nothing could stop you from going for the kiss, the last one while he lived. I am still so grateful for that kiss. It was the gentlest thing I saw all year. In the company of moonlight. The dignified bones of your face in the days before you died, so fierce I had to turn away. No pretense in the flesh, but a purity difficult to observe. Those were the days beyond language, the days of benediction. I would leave your side and wonder if it had all been a dream. Moonlight was lying with you in the quiet room. There were owls calling from the trees. I heard them again last night, months after you were gone. I still feel the curve of your forehead in the palm of my hand. To the little yellow butterfly that is your current disguise. You are flying low over the ground this morning. It is the day of the blood moon. You are wary. Frost has not hit hard, and your bright wings are still strong. I've seen you here a week. Once, in your owl disguise, you flew above me, silent as only owls can fly, and landed near to watch me pass. You saw me cry as I spoke to you of all I miss and all I wish were true. I saw you standing at the border of the field, dressed as a deer, your senses sharper than they'd been in years. You watched me as I walked into the woods and turned to wave at you. Late afternoon, you were the cross-hatched sun, a golden blanket thrown beneath the pines. One night, I heard you call to me deep in the trees. You asked, "Who?" You asked me, "Who?" again. And I admit, I was so lost I didn't know what you wanted me to say. Sick to death. There's a photograph of you on my desk, your knowing smile a month before you died. You, in your soft black coat, standing just inside the door of your friend's house, the last time you were there. I talk to that picture all the time. I did just now. Kenny D, I say. I called you by your rap name for the laughs. I'm sick to death of my filthy glasses. I can't see. Sick to death of winter. Sick to death of COVID, whatever it's called today. Sick to death of loneliness and all this booming silence. Sick of the sound the fridge makes and the pump droning on at night. A dog who snores and growls while fast asleep. The rasping of my toenails on the sheets. Wind outside. The repetition of my breaths. Days passing so slowly, then night, then another day. I'm sick of goddamn everything. But you were the one truly sick to death. And even weeks before the end, the one to look it squarely in the eye and smile. Thank you.
Let's give Carolyn another hand. And once more for all the poets in this session, yes, thanks.
And you just heard from this year's Poets at Art Fest 4-day poetry festival readings by David Malone, Jason Heru, Allison Chisholm, Michael E. Castiles, and Carolyn Smart. It is crowding 59 minutes after 4 o'clock. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall at Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online at www.cfrc.ca. Just a quick reminder that I upload both hours of my show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com, and they do remain there for 3 years. So before we slide quickly in less than a minute into the second hour, I just want to send out my heartfelt thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to the first hour of this show today. And also an equal heartfelt thanks to all the poets who participated this year and all at the Poets at Art Fest Poetry Festival. And all who came out to listen there. It was a wonderful event again this year, and I'm always so touched by the crowds that come out to listen to a poetry event. So that is, it was wonderful. And now it is just seconds away